Okay, ladies and gentlemen, my name is Faith. What's yours? So let me just tell you what we're going to do tonight, and then we're going to do it. Tonight we are going to be analyzing a paragraph of the commentary that the Rebbe inserted into the Haggadah. And the background is that in 1946, the Rebbe published a commentary in the Haggadah with sources and customs and explanations. And in 1963, he augmented this. It was 150 years from the Histalkus and the passing of the Alter Rebbe, and he inserted a number of teachings into the Haggadah, added it to the Haggadah originally, and it was printed as what we call Hosafot, as an addition. And then, somehow, there was another page added on of what was called Hashmatot, things that were left out, appendices that were added in at the end. I believe in 1976 or 77, everything was incorporated into one seamless commentary. And to be sure, these added paragraphs are markedly different than the others, because the others are filled with sources, and these are generally not. And on the surface, they seem almost simplistic. So this year I decided I'm going to figure this out. And I realized that I have been fooling myself for about 40 years now. And I never really understood it until today. I don't say there was any pride. I mean, I say it with pride that at least I figured it out now. I could have gone another 10 years not knowing what I was talking about. Now, in 1990 or 91, the famous Torontonian Rabbi Emanuel, Yaakov Emanuel Shachat, Zecherenu Livracha, translated the Rebbe's Haggadah. So, in order to make life easier for all of you, I gave you a translation. So we can actually follow in along in the translation. And I made you photocopies of the Hebrew, if you want to follow it along in Hebrew, or if you want to follow along in English. And I'm going to actually take exception to some of the translation. I think some of the translation is actually inaccurate. It's easy for me to say it now when he's not here. He'll probably take my head off, but I'm going to tell you why I think it's inaccurate. So, first of all, it's not precisely in the same fashion that he didn't translate things exactly. But if you're looking in the Hebrew, if you're looking on the Hebrew side, you'll see there's a large paragraph. It starts off with the italic words matzah, and the Rebbe opens that comment, that gloss, by saying in today's day and age, it is also biblical, not to be confused with other mitzvot on Pesach, which are not biblical when we don't have a Beit HaMikdash or a Korban Pesach. Now, in the original Haggadah, the next portion is on the column 2 where it says, HaPrusa Ben Shtei HaShleimot, that you take the piece of matzah between two whole matzahs, and we'll get there, Mitzvah Shem. We're going to study that too. But in the meanwhile, in 1963, the next two paragraphs were added in. Matzah, and then again, matzah. So you end up in this, now in the Hebrew, with three comments, three separate segments, each one with the heading matzah, which is rather unusual. We are going to study the first one together. Initially, I was going to study both, but I promised you I would keep it short. So we're just doing the first segment, which is three paragraphs in the Hebrew. If you want to follow along in the English, incidentally, this Haggadah is out of print these days. Was very hard for me to get one. I managed to get a copy of it just before the class. And this, my wife was very resourceful and got this online somewhere. But if you're following along in the English, you'll see on top it says page 34. You'll see it says number 158. The eating of matzah remains, even nowadays, a scriptural obligation. And he left out a whole lot of details were left out in the translation. Now, he begins with the words, a traditional aphorism. And I'm going to make a big disagreement right here with the words, a traditional aphorism. So if you look in the Hebrew or in the Yiddish, it says, matzah, amekubel dikevart. Amekubel dikevart sounds like a Kabbalistic teaching. That's what it sounds like, except that it's not. It's not inherently Kabbalistic, because it draws on the Zohar, but the Zohar really is comprised of two very different kinds of teachings. Some of the teachings are entirely Kabbalistic, and they sound like gibberish, unless you're very well versed in teachings of Kabbalah. And other parts of the Zohar are very Midrashic-like. They have stories, or they have sometimes teachings which it's not very difficult to, I mean, you might not understand why and how that is, but it doesn't read differently than another Midrash. So the teaching here is not a Kabbalah teaching. It's really it's a Midrashic Zoharic teaching. And there's nothing Kabbalistic here. So it can't be Kabbalistic. So what it has to mean is a received tradition, something that was received. Now, when you translate in English a traditional aphorism, that sounds like Manischewitz. It's traditional. Or even if you say a minhag, a Torah tradition, it's not an accurate translation. This is, as we are going to see, a received tradition that comes from the founders of the Hasidic movement through the generational Torah leadership. And when you start to read this, it sounds very, I don't know how to say this nicely, it sounds weird. It's like, what does it have to do with matzah? So he says like this mekubel dikevart, he says matzah shmura, guarded matzah, which is the hand-baked round matzah we use at the Seder night, Vert gerufen b'shnei shemes. This is Yiddish. It's called, it has two names. These names are atzmiim, these names are intrinsic, and these names are pnimiim, they are inherent. Which really means something which is very personal. And what are the two names? The two names are michla de mehemenusa, bread of faith, oy michla das vasa, or food or bread of healing. And then he says six words in Yiddish. Es git a chizuk in das. It reinforces the faculty of das. Das is like knowledge. The knowledge of being able to differentiate between one thing and the next. So babies do not have das. They're not really able to differentiate. A child doesn't know what's good for it or bad for it. That's why hopefully he has parents that are looking out for him. As you get older, you become more discerning. The reason that babies put everything in their mouth, giving their parents heart attacks, is because the first thing that develops for a baby is his taste buds. And that's the easiest way for him to differentiate, which kind of works for salt and sugar, but not for a lot of other things. Going around and biting people and tasting them to know who they are is not a very good idea. So, But this is this being able to notice, you know, like some people have what we call they have a gift. They're an aptitude. They notice. They have people call it a good sense of smell, a knack. They know how to pick apart the honest from the dishonest, the real from the fake, the good from the bad. It's not always so simple. So that's what you use das for. Like there's a famous expression that's used by the Rishonim, im ein dat, havdalah minayin. If you have no dat, how will you be able to make a difference? And we say, Hanotein, Lasechvi, Bina, Lahavchin, yet so the rooster has a little bit of Bina, an understanding. It understands now is morning, but it's not really able to differentiate. It's not, you wouldn't exactly say the chicken now, he's a bardas. Now he understands the situation. Go to the chicken. The rooster can figure it out for you. No, of course not. He has a very limited understanding of now it's morning, now it doesn't really have the concept of das. Okay, so that's the teaching. This teaching is that matzah is called two names, and it gives a chizuk and das. It strengthens the faculty of das. Matzah shmura, which you know we're speaking about the matzah shmura that you eat on the night of the Seder. Okay, all right. I mean, like I'm going to ask a lot of questions on this soon, but let's just say, fine. So matzah has two names, and it means it gives a chizuk and das. Which what das has to do with healing or faith is a good question, because it's neither, but it seems. But okay. Then the Rebbe starts saying something which it's very interesting. I mean, it's a quote of a talk of the previous Rebbe. But what does it have to do with the Haggadah, and why is it part of the commentary on the Haggadah? He says, "Thus is there pnimi nikudi atzmi." This is the inherent very pointed and intrinsic teaching, or Vart, Vasmareinu Harav HaMagid Memizrich, that the Alter Rebbe's Rebbe, the successor of the Baal Shem Tov, of the Magid of Mizrich, were received. That's why it's called Mekubaldik. Mekubaldik is Yiddish for something which is Kabbalah, as in received. So the Magid of Mizrich received this from his teacher, Moreinu HaKadosh, Moreinu HaBaal Shem Tov, for his holy teacher, the Baal Shem Tov. We're now on the next page. And the Baal Shem Tov received it in the name of his own teacher, B'Shem Moira, his own teacher and master, HaBaal Chaya Yechida. Who is the Baal Chaya Yechida? This refers to Achia HaShiloni. The Baal Shem Tov was a very serious man, and the Baal Shem Tov maintained that he was being taught Torah by an angel for 10 years before he started to reveal the teachings of Chassidus. And the name of this angel was once upon a time a person who lived, and his name was Achia HaShiloni. He's a very, very enigmatic and unusual figure in Jewish history. According to Maimonides, the Rambam, who is the ultimate rationalist, in his Hakdama, in his preface to Mishneh Torah, the Rambam tells us that Achia HaShiloni was a Levite. So he didn't die in the desert, because the Levites all survived. He was very young when they left the land of Egypt. And he came to the land of Israel. And he lived for a very long time. And he seems to be very pious and very scholarly, but also living in the shadows. He doesn't get ordained until the time of David HaMelech. He's ordained by King David. King David dies at 70. Achia HaShiloni left Mitzrayim as a young person. So you got to do the math. He's got to be 400 and something years old. And that's when he rises to prominence. Talk about waiting till his time came. He's a very late bloomer. So Achia HaShiloni becomes the Rebbe of the Jewish people when David HaMelech is nostalgic. And who is his prized disciple? Eliyahu HaNavi. Now usually when we hear about tzaddikim receiving Torah from a higher source, we hear about him getting taught by Eliyahu HaNavi. The Baal Shem Tov's teacher was Achia HaShiloni. How and why that is the case, we don't necessarily even know or understand, but it's certainly beyond the purview of this class. The bottom line is the Baal Shem Tov receives a teaching from a malach. The Baal Shem Tov passes this teaching on to the Magid, and this teaching is then passed to, by the Magid, Lahoid Kveit Kedushas Talmidei HaMekabel Pnimi, to his the disciple, his intrinsic recipient, his close disciple, Rabbeinu HaZaken, what we call the Alter Rebbe. And then it's handed down from Rebbe to Rebbe. And here it says the word Birur with explanation. Elsewhere it's brought down with Biur with explanation. Okay, what does that have to do with the Haggadah? Okay, it's very nice that the Baal Shem Tov heard a teaching from a Malach, and the Malach gave a teaching to the Magid, and the Magid gave a teaching to the Alter Rebbe, and the Alter Rebbe passed it down to the Rabbeim, and the Rabbeim spent time teaching it. Oh, that's not enough. Further. Kol echad v'echad mehed kveit kedushas aviseinu, rabbeseinu, each one of the holy Rebbes, hakadoshim, zuchusim yagin aleinu me the merit shieldas, each one of them went on to go ahead and to explain these ideas. Mosar ubir esanakudavart. Each one of them explained this intrinsic point. This is like, okay, like, what does that have to do with matzah? It's very nice that the Rebbe's passed this teaching on. It's very nice. But okay. It doesn't fit into the whole style over here. This is a very, very scholarly work that draws on a range of classic and neoclassic sources. Yeah, the Rebbe just gives this literally a chunk of a sikha, and he tells us that the sikha was delivered on Yir Aleph Nisan, 1949, Tavshin Tes, and it's printed in Sefer Amarim Tavshin Tes. So it's baffled. This thing just baffled me. And I'm going to tell you why it baffled me. First of all, it baffled me because I don't understand what this is saying. What is it teaching us? Secondly, I started to think, 1 second. This is the name of matzah? Michle de Mehemnusa, that's the name of matzah? Is that the name of matzah? Is that what the Bible calls matzah? The answer, by the way, is no. It's not what the Bible calls matzah. But the Bible does give matzah a name. The Chumash does give matzah a name. Is this what the sages called matzah? No. And they gave matzah a name, a pragmatic name. And even the Zohar doesn't even call it that name. The Zohar just describes it. So this was like, I don't know what's going on here. That was 2 days ago. But now I do. So And I am going to share with you what I've collated and figured out over the last couple of days. And then when you go back and read this, you'll go, wow, that's pretty cool. That kind of makes sense. Okay, so let us begin. First, I'm going to share with you the words of the Zohar, because in fairness, let's see what the Zohar does say, instead of what the Zohar doesn't say. So the Zohar is found in two places. It's in Zohar Chelik Beis. It's found in Parshas Tetzaveh, and it's also found in Parshas Bo. Let me tell you what it says in Parshas Bo, and tell you what it says in Parshas Tetzaveh, and the fact that it's like presented as, the Zohar calls it food of. But the Zohar doesn't really use that terminology. In fact, that terminology does not show up until the Maimorim, a Maimor, a Hasidic teaching of the Alter Rebbe in Likutei Torah. The Zohar says like this. Parshas Bo, second section of the Zohar, which is on Chumash Shemot. This is page 41, side A. The Zohar states, and I'll read to you in Aramaic, and I'll translate. Pekuda basar da lechel matzah b'Pesach. The next mitzvah, because we're talking about a different mitzvah before, the next mitzvah is to eat matzah on Pesach. Okay. Begin. The ihu duchrono ledorei dorin. Because this eating of matzah is a memory. In Aramaic, dalad takes the place of zayin. So for example, we say a zohar or an akeva in Hebrew. A zohar is a male. A nekeva is a female. In Aramaic, you would call it dachar or nukva. So it says, the Zohar says, it's duchrona. Think about it with a zayin, zuchrona, like zecher. It's a memory. Ledorei dorin means for generations, like dor. Al rozo de mehemnuta, on the mysterious secret of faith. The mysterious secret. Now, the Mefarshim and the Zohar say that this is referring to the secret of Hashem's presence, of the Shechina. But the Zohar doesn't even say that. The Zohar just calls it the secret of faith. V'ha ukmei di Yisrael nafku ba'ahu zimna. And we have already explained that the Jewish people left slavery at that time. So the Moser, Misoid Elikim Achedim v'asitra achra. Nafku ba'hu zimna, they left at that time, miraza de tavon acharon, from making the mistake of other gods. So leaving Egypt was not just leaving physical slavery, it was leaving the mistaken notion of worshipping idols. The Egyptians worshipped idols, as did most of the world, but especially in Egypt, and now the Jewish people are leaving the worship of idols, and they're going to be worshiping God. You all know that before we left Mitzrayim, we had to do a great act of defiance. That was slaughtering a sheep. And why was that so meaningful? Because the sheep was the god of the Egyptians. Especially like the Rambam says in the Maariv Avuchim, that these Kabbat monks of antiquity used to worship the zodiac of the spring, Aries. So Aries is the sheep, and they used to worship the lamb. So we slaughtered the lamb as if to demonstrate, we're not afraid of your God. Okay, fine. So the Jewish people left behind other gods and they follow God. Va'alu b'raza de memnusa. They left the ideas. They were locked up in idolatry. And now they went into the mystery or secret of faith in Hashem. Va'ukma raza de na b'kam aduchti. And I've already explained this in many places. So the Zohar doesn't really say very much. The Zohar doesn't say that it's bread of anything. The Zohar in Daf Mem Aleph just says, and now the mitzvah of eating matzah, because the mitzvah of eating matzah is a reminder that we left behind idolatry, and we entered the secret of faith. All right. I mean, there's no name for matzah here. No, there's no name. It's not a name at all. Now, the Zohar in Daf Kuf Pei Gimel on page 183 is a little more explicit. Not much, but a little more explicit. And it says like this. Kad nafku Yisrael mimitzrayim, when the Jewish people left the land of Egypt, lahave yode ikara v'raza de mehemnusa. They did not understand the foundation, the principles of faith in Hashem. They didn't understand it. Couldn't relate to it. Omar kud shabrichu, so God says, yita'amun Yisrael asvasa. Let them be healed from this idolatry, this spiritual malaise. Let them eat healing food. What was this healing food? So it doesn't say, but the understanding is, what were the Jewish people commanded to eat when they left the land of Egypt? They ate Korban Pesach, and it says you eat the Korban Pesach together with matzah. So the understanding is you have to eat healing food. What is it healing you from? From what you would call the illness of confusion, of worshiping idols. Va'ad the yechlun asvasa, da, and until they eat this healing food, lo yischazun lahain mechla achara. They can't eat any other food. Which means until you eat matzah, you can't eat chametz. You have to eat matzah, then you eat chametz. So matzah is like healing food, and then you can eat regular food. Kivan de achlu matzah, de ihi asvasa. Once they ate matzah, which is healing, it doesn't say bread of healing. It doesn't say that. It says once they ate matzah, which is healing. So now lemeal uleminda beraza de memnu. So now they could enter into a knowledge of this, the secret of faith in Hashem. It certainly sounds like spiritual healing. We're going to get it. We're going to talk about that at great length. Omar Kuchabrichu, Hashem said, the Holy One said, Mikanu lahalon ischazel in chametz. Once they get past this, they can eat chametz afterwards. That's it. That's the Zohar. It doesn't talk about matzah per se very much. It's just two brief teachings that speak to us about the importance of eating matzah, because somehow matzah purged our systems of idolatry and enabled us to be able to understand godliness, to relate to godliness. That's what matzah did. That's what the Zohar says. So I'm looking at this comment. I mean, it's a sikha from the Friedrich Rebbe. We'll talk about that sikha soon. We'll go into it. But I mean, like, I don't even know what this means. So let's go through actual Chumash. Let's see. When the first time the Torah talks about matzah, second time the Torah talks about matzah, let's see how it goes. I'm reading to you now from Exodus 12. Exodus 12, the first time we hear the word matzah. We never heard about matzah before. Huh? Shmot. No. Lot is like, it's not a commandment, it's not a mitzvah. It's Lot and Avram are eating matzah, fine. But that's not really like a commandment for the Jewish people. But the first time we hear it as a mitzvah, we hear Moshe Rabbeinu, this is the commandment that Moshe Rabbeinu received on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. He got a whole download of a lot of things to tell us. And one of the things to tell us was that in addition to bringing this Korban Pesach and to putting its blood on the doorpost, in addition to all that, and on the lintel, it says, verse 8, Va'achlo es habasar b'layla hazeh, you should eat this meat on that night, tzli'esh, you should eat it roasted. Umatzot al marorim yochlu, eat it with matzah mar. Doesn't say anything about matzah, doesn't tell us about matzah, this is just a commandment. The commandment, you got to eat matzah. Okay, fine. You take it forward to verse 15. Here the Torah says, Shivat Yamim Matzot Tochelu. You're going to have to celebrate, it says, generationally, for posterity. And when that happens, you're going to be eating matzah for 7 days. Because really, the when they left Mitzrayim, they had a prohibition. The Gemara says in Maseches Pesachim Adaf Savaches, the Gemara says it was a one-day prohibition. Why didn't they eat matzah, the chametz afterwards? Where are they supposed to get chametz from? They left Egypt, went to a desert. The matzah, the dough they had, baked into matzah. Where are they going to get chametz from? They didn't have chametz. But the mitzvah was to eat for 1 day. On the night of Pesach, before you leave Mitzrayim, you have to eat matzah. And then Hashem says, you're going to be eating matzah for 7 days, and on the first day, you make sure to destroy all the chametz. It doesn't talk about matzah, doesn't give a name of matzah, doesn't explain matzah, nothing. Then we get to a little bit further in Parshat Bo, verse 18. It says, Berishon, on the first, Barba Asar, on the 14th day, Ba'erev, in the evening, at night, Tochlu Matzot, you should eat matzah. And this is our sages tell us, this is the responsibility, the actual obligation of eating matzah. What about the 6 days of matzah? Well, elsewhere it says 7 days matzah. So we have a whole sophisticated line of reasoning in which we derive that the first night is obligatory and the other days of Pesach are elective. We have no names for matzah. There's no name. If you eat Parshas Bo, you don't say, oh, matzah. Matzah is, I don't know, matzah is a mitzvah. God told us to eat matzah. However, when we get to Chumash Dvarim, here things get a little interesting. Comes to Parshas Ye, Deuteronomy 16. And over here, we're hearing about the holiday of Pesach. Verse 3 tells us, Lo tochel alav chametz. You're not going to be eating any chametz for shivat yamim, 7 days. Outside of Israel, it's 8 days, but 7 days. And what will you eat? For 7 days, tochel alav matzot. You're going to eat matzah. And here we get a name. Lechem oni. Lechem oni. So if somebody's going to say, does matzah have a name? What's the answer? Lechem oni. Yes, bread of affliction. That's what it says, bread of affliction. Why are you going to eat this bread? It doesn't say in order to leave Egypt. Ki, because b'chipazon yatzata me'eretz Mitzrayim. Because you left Egypt in great haste. So you're going to have to eat bread of affliction because you left Egypt in great haste. Rashi comments, quoting our sages, he says, what's the lechem oni? It reminds us of the affliction. Shemazkir et ha'oni shenit anu b'mitzrayim. It reminds us of the affliction. So if there is a name for matzah, I mean, I guess that would be lechem oni. No, but the Rebbe says here that there's a shemus atzmim upnimim, intrinsic, inherent names. So I'm like, I don't understand what's going on over here. The Torah gives a name, and it's not asvasa, and it's not mehemnusa. And it even tells us why. Ki b'chipazon. If you go a little further and do in the same parsha, in Parshat Re'e, go further in the same chapter, it says, Sheshet Yamim, this is verse 8 of chapter 16, 6 days you eat matzah, and on the seventh day is atzeret, and once again, there's nothing really here about matzah. No name for matzah. So the Torah mentions matzah no less than 4 times. Only one of the times does it give a name and a reason. And the name and reason have nothing to do with healing and nothing to do with faith. So how could you say that this is the intrinsic inherent name when in fact the Torah says otherwise? So now I'm like, this is really baffling. Now the Gemara in Mesechet Psachim, the Gemara actually focuses on this business of lechem oni. What does that mean, bread of affliction? What does it even mean? Do we hear about the Jewish people eating matzah in Egypt before the night of the Exodus? No. What does it mean, this is the bread they ate in Mitzrayim? This is the bread that they ate the night before the Exodus. So the Gemara in Daf Kuf Yud Kuf Tezvav Amud Beis, in the very end of page 115, side B of Mesechet Pesachim, the Gemara says like this: Amar Shmuel. Shmuel said, Lechem Oni. It says Lechem Oni. What does this mean, Lechem Oni? And Shmuel said, I'll tell you what it means. It's Lechem Sheonin Olav Dvarim. It's bread over which things are said. Because in modern Hebrew, la'anot means to answer or respond. But in biblical Hebrew, aniyah means to raise your voice, to declare. Like we see, for example, the firstling fruit that are brought to Yerushalayim. The farmer takes the very first blossoms, he marks them, puts a little India rubber on it, or puts a little ribbon. And then when the fruits reach maturation, it says you put them in a basket, you come before Hashem, you place up the basket, it says, V'anita v'amarta. If you translate literally, you answer and you say, who are you answering to? You're not answering. It's meaning, it means you raise your voice. You declare and say, Arami Ovidovi, there's a whole thing that was supposed to say. And incidentally, those verses, those words that were supposed to declare, are in the Haggadah. And the word Haggadah comes from Higadti Hayom, which is taken from that portion of the Torah. And the word Haggadah has two meanings, but that's a whole other subject. But I want to say, I'm just trying to stay focused. So Shmuel teaches us that the meaning of lechem oni means that bread which you are going to be answering many things over. That's the meaning of lechem oni. Okay, fine. The Gemara says, Tanya nami hachi, lechem oni sha'onim alav dvarim harbi. The question becomes, what does this mean? What does this mean? That you say many things over the bread. What does this mean? So if you take a look in the commentary of the Tosfos, Tosfos speaks about this on Daf Kuf Yudalad, just 2 pages earlier. The Tosfos talks about the way things used to be. Today we have big tables. They don't actually move in and out. But those days you used to have little tables. You know, like a little Yiddish, we call it a tishala, you know, like a little bridge tables. You move them in, move them out. So what we called the Seder plate was once the table. So we push the ka'ara, we push the matzah aside, and then we bring the matzah close. In those days, you push the little table away, and bring the little table close. So the Tosfos says, Akira Sashulchan, why you move the table away? The answer is, Kadesh Yishal Aben, so that the child should ask. Because we want to make this a dynamic conversation. We don't want this to be a monologue. Monologues are boring. The kids are like, this is boring. So what do you want to do? Get them involved. So you do weird things. We sit down to eat. We break the bread, and we push the bread away. The kid's like, what are you doing? Why aren't we eating now? You didn't even eat yet. You're already pushing the table away. Ah, funny you should ask. Does that have any other questions? Yeah, I noticed you're dipping in mysis. What's all this thing? Oh, let me tell you a story. So now we have a conversation going. So the Tosfos says, however, miyad kishayker, and immediately when you push it away and the child asks, right away machzirin, you have to bring back the matzah and the moror. Why do you have to bring it back? You're not eating it yet. We have a whole Haggadah to say. The answer is, shari tzarech loimer b'Haggadah matzah zu, moror zeh, because you have to say in the Haggadah, this matzah, lechem sha'onen olav dvarim harbe. You have to say, this matzah, this moror. Now, it's funny, because Tosfos says you bring it right back, but if you remember the Haggadah, we don't say matzah zu, moror zu, till the end of the Haggadah. That's a little funny. So the Me'iri, Rabbeinu Menachem, Me'iri, he has a different way of learning this. The Me'iri says, there is a Me'iri somewhere here. I just have to find it. The Me'iri says, Rabbeinu Menachem Me'iri in the Beis HaBechira says, that you bring, why is it called Lechem Oni? Remez Yeshbo. There's an allusion over here. Lahar Beidvorim, lots of things are being said over here. Ratzon Olomar, Haggadah, Hallel. The beginning of the Hallel. Because you know that we divide the Hallel in two pieces. Part of the Hallel we say before we eat the matzah and the murah. And then there's a part of the Hallel when the tables are cleaned up. So you're going to say, says the Me'iri, you have to recite the Hallel and the Haggadah, or at least part of the Hallel, over the Lechem Oni. So this is a name for matzah. What is matzah? Matzah is the, what do they call that? A talking piece? What do you call it? You have like a visual aid. It's a visual aid matzah. And even if we don't follow the words of the Me'iri, even if you want to follow more the Tosfos, which incidentally Rabbeinu Chananel uses the same words, he says, Sha'in in Dvarim Havi, you have to say matzah zu. Which matzah zu, if you take a look in the Rambam seems to say, not for the whole Haggadah, he says, machazir hashulchan, you bring back the table, v'omer, Pesach zeh, he said, this is the Pesach, and then, and magbiah hamor, you pick up mor zeh, and then he says, magbiah hamatzah biyado, v'omer matzah zu. So we have a dispute between the Rishonim, do you recite the whole Haggadah over the matzah? Is the matzah a visual aid for the entire story? Or is the matzah only for the part of the Haggadah where we get? So the Bach famously has a whole discussion about this. Because in the Tur, it says, you bring the table back when you say the Haggadah. And the Bach in Simen Tofai and Gimel in chapter 473, in Sivkot and Yud Beis, subsection 12, he says that you bring it back, the smak, the Sefer Mitzvahs Katan, or Moshe of Kusi, was one of the Balia Tosfos. He also says you bring it back to say from the beginning of the Haggadah. Because what do we say in the beginning of the Haggadah? We say, Avodim Hayinu, we were slaves, Ba'ara de Mitzrayim. And we speak about, this is the bread of affliction. So because you speak of the bread of affliction, so it makes sense that the whole Haggadah should be set up for bread of affliction. But he says, you look in the Rambam seems to see other ways. Okay, fine. So we have a dispute in the Rishonim. If onim means, what does it mean a lot of things, a lot of different things? But we have like two different approaches of what you're supposed to say. Are you saying this matzah or are you saying many ideas? We'll soon see that There are two different like theories or theses behind the message of the Haggadah, and the Ksav Sofer says that you speak both about liberty and about slavery. The matzah has a dual message, which you're going to see in a minute. The matzah is bread of affliction. It's also bread of miracles. But it's not about faith. It's not about healing. And then we go further in the Gemara. And the Gemara says, another opinion, Lechem Oni, what does that mean? Davar Acher. Oni means oni, because it's written letter vav. Poverty. What's poverty? Ma oni shadarki beprusa, afkan beprusa. A poor person has a piece of bread. He doesn't get a whole loaf. Gets whatever he can get. We call it a shtikala. A piece. He's got a piece. Doesn't get a whole big fancy matzah. So in other words, there's something broken about the matzah, which is incidentally why we break the matzah before we begin to say words over it. Because both of these meanings are accurate. Both of these meanings are true. And if you want to know what that means, darki beprusa, you take a look, for example, in I'll get back to this in a second. You take like example in the Shibayla Haleket, in the Machzer Vitri of Reb Simcha Vitri, the Machzer Vitri says, what does it mean that it's Lechem Oni? He says, the Oni takes a piece off a piece. That's the broken nature, that's Darkish Aloni. Boitzea mina prusa kedarkish Aloni. Ani is a desperate guy. He doesn't take what you can get. Beggars aren't choosers. So that's an intrinsic name. That's an intrinsic name. And by the way, what is the philosophy behind these names? If it's about poverty or not about poverty? So the Rambam, in Mor Nevuchim, speaks about matzah in two different ways. First of all, he says that matzah is, in Mor Nevuchim, this is in the third section, where he goes through different mitzvahs, the ideas behind different mitzvahs. The Rambam says that Pesach is a zikaron, it's a remembrance of the miracles that Hashem did for us. And he uses the word ra'ayon, and we understand the translation of Yehuda ibn Tibbon, that the word ra'ayon in our language would be hashkafa, like a philosophy, perspective. That what do we look at this? That we look at it, that we say that a person, when he left Mitzrayim, a person has to be zocher tamid yemei hara'ah. You have to remember the bad days. Never forget where you came from. So the matzah reminds us where we came from. It's bread of affliction. It's bread of poverty. It reminds us we come from a background of slavery. That's one idea of matzah. This is the Rambam's turning the words of the Gemara on a literal level into philosophical prose. And he says, this will enable us to remain humble. Of course, you know matzah's flat. Humble bread. As they say, eat a little humble bread. Matzah is humble bread. It humbles you. V'lachein, says Rambam, yoichel matzah. That's why you should eat matzah. It'll make you humble. Doesn't say nothing about faith here. Doesn't say anything about healing. Conversely, the Rambam, this is in Perek Mem Gimel, in chapter 43 of the third section of Mor Nevuchim. If you go to chapter 46, the Rambam says that all of the rules of Pesach, there's a lot of rules in the kitchen. How you're supposed to prepare the meat. You have to roast it. How you cut up the meat. How you carve the meat. You don't break any bones. And you have to eat it with matzah. He says, what is this? What the Torah's telling you how to eat? I'm getting the culinary instructions now? He says, all these ideas are one and the same. The point is that it points to swiftness. We didn't have time to cut up, to carve the meat. We don't have time to cook the roast. Can't have a Thanksgiving turkey at cholent over here. What's the fastest way to cook? Barbecue. Throw it on the grill. You got to cook it fast. Why? Because we left Egypt in tremendous haste. And because we left Egypt in tremendous haste, that's what we have to remember, having left in great haste. And because we were so worried, we left with nothing but dough. As the Abarbanel says, Hashem told us, you're not allowed to eat any chametz on this first day. So we were so nervous, we didn't have a chance to bake the dough. So we ran out of there and we were pounding the dough as we left. As the Shibayla Haleket quotes the famous Tosfos Rid, Rabbi Yishaya Ditroni, he says, how do we know they left in great haste? This is because if they could have had time to bake their bread, they surely would have baked the bread. How do you describe to somebody, we left in great haste? We didn't have time to bake the bread. We just needed some dough, and we had to run. We had to run with dough on our back. So the truth is, he says, that this whole later business of matzah for a week, that only comes later on. However, the idea of the matzah reminds us that we had to leave Mitzrayim in great haste. So this is, I think, fair to say an intrinsic name. If you want to say that matzah has two intrinsic names, you call it the talking pieces, and you call it the matzah, which reminds us of poverty and humility. Those are two inherent names. It's in the Torah. It's Lechem Oni. It's alluded to in the Torah. It's described by our sages and rabbis. The Abar Benel famously asks a question. He says, I don't understand what's going on over here. He says, when they were in Egypt, they were told to eat matzah. You're telling me now we eat matzah because we left Egypt in haste? That was the night before we left Egypt. How did they know they're going to leave the next day in haste? The Abar Benel goes through different sides of the question. And he says, you know what? God knew. And he says something else. The Abar Benel says that because the people were told the night before that they couldn't eat chametz, so they were like mindful of the dough. They're watching the dough. Now remember, they didn't have wristwatches. They still didn't have iPhones. So how could you know time? In those days they had like water clocks, or they had sundials. Yeah, people didn't walk out a sundial on their back. How would you know if 18 minutes went by or not? So one of the things they knew universally is how long it takes for dough to rise. And they said the dough never rose. By the time we left Egypt, somehow, miraculously, everything baked. So now they knew how fast they left. Why? Because that was like a universal way of telling time. And because the night before, they were worried about eating matzah. And they knew they have to bake the dough within 18 minutes. And now they leave Mitzrayim in great haste, and everything's baked. So they knew they left in 18 minutes. So this is like, that's the idea of how the matzah stimulates the remembrance of going out of Mitzrayim. So I'm thinking about all these things. I'm learning all these things. And I'm saying, I don't understand what the Rebbe is saying over here. What does this mean that matzah has two atzmiistic names and that Abayim talked about this and that it came from the Baal Shem Tov and Achia HaShileini? What does this even mean? So I went back to the original talk of the previous Rebbe that the Rebbe is citing here. And very interestingly, it was not a public talk. It was a private talk to one chassid, who I suppose must have transcribed it, or somebody else was there transcribed it. The chassid was Reb Shlomo Aaron Kazanovsky, and he came in apparently to give a report about some things that he was doing. And the previous Rebbe started talking. He talked 2 pages worth. And he talks like this. He starts talking to him about education. And he talked about the education that he received. And he received an education that was precise, an education that was very pointed. And he says to Reb Shlomo Aaron, he says, you should know that whenever there's a, if you know how to listen, he calls it a chush hashmiyah, to really listen, to get an idea, he says, you should be able to get to the core of the idea. And he uses very interesting Yiddish words. He says, he calls it in Hebrew, he calls it the chut hapnimi. And then he uses a Yiddish word, the innerliche schnirl, the rope within. I'll use language of quantum physics, the nuclei. So you can't have a nuclei without an atom. The nuclei lives within the atom, right? The atom frames the nuclei. But ultimately, what will decide how the quantum physics reality reacts is by virtue of where the nuclei is, not where the framing of the atom is. So to get to the nuclei of an idea, and he goes on to speak about, he says, in every Hasidic story, in every Hasidic teaching, an adage, an aphorism, there's a nuclei. And you have to be able to get to the nuclei. And then he talks about different ways of learning Hasidus in a more emotional way, more intellectual way. And then he talks again about education. And then he says that when there's something that's passed from generation to generation, he says it's not about the external reality, the way the idea is delivered. It's about the core of the idea. Let me give you a simple example. This is almost like lame, but just to make the point. Little boy came home from school and his mama said, hey, little Yankel, what did you learn in school today? Yankel says, today we learned about apples. He says, really? What did you learn about apples? So our teacher was showing us like 2 apples and then put 2 apples. And she showed us that 2 apples and 2 apples is 4 apples. And then we did 5 apples and plus 5 apples. And then we did 10 apples. And we're counting apples. The whole day we're counting apples. We're learning about apples. And the mama says, Yankel, you didn't learn about apples. You learned about arithmetic today. He says, no. Today was about apples. And he comes home the next day. What did you learn in school today? Today we learned about oranges. Did you? Yes. It was 1 orange and another orange. And then it was 2 other oranges. And then we counted them up. Right? The little boy missed the point. It wasn't about apples or oranges. It was about arithmetic. How would you convey arithmetic to a child who's talking, you can't talk to him about these lofty concepts, things that don't have a you have to have some pragmatic way to deliver it. So you have an example of things which are abstract. It shouldn't be abstract. Make it about apples and oranges. There's an abstraction in every concept. Every concept has an abstraction. The abstraction in every concept can apply to a whole variety of different things. They could be the same thesis can be used in medicine. The same thesis can be used in music. The same thesis can be used in philosophy. The same thesis can be used in marketing. Let's say something called repetition. The doctor will tell you that the repetition of taking this medication in repetition is going to get your body used to something. And if you want to market something, you have to hit the people again and again and again. And if you want to get the music, you have to get the bang, you have to repeat to the stanza, has to repeat a certain amount of times. It's the same philosophy. It's the same idea, same concept. But the concept is application in a variety of ways. So there's the nuclei of the idea. And then there's the pragmatic or technical part of the idea. Just like, for example, if it's a very hot frying pan, it's not a good idea to grab a hold of it if it's a skillet. Because it's all metal. You know, so what do you need to have? You got to have a glove. So the glove enables you to hold a hot handle. It's a euphemism. It's not about hot or cold. It's about you using something to be able to grasp something. We know that Shlomo HaMelech was considered the wisest of people. What's so wise about him? It says, Vayidaber Shlomo Shleishes Halafim Moshel. He could speak 3,000 parables. Okay, he's a good storyteller. What makes him so wise? And the answer is, Chassidus explains, Shlomo HaMelech could take any idea, and he knew how to relate it to 3,000 different levels of people, that each person understood the idea perfectly where they were. That takes wisdom. To be able to understand your audience, and what they do know, what they don't know, how to convey an idea, that takes tremendous wisdom. So he talks all about the nuclei of an idea. And then he says like this, then the Friedrich Rebbe says, now I'm going to tell you, I'm a kubel de kevort. Now I'm going to tell you an idea which is passed down from generation to generation to the Rabbeim, and each one explained it. And what's the kubel de kevort? That matzah is called two essential names. And this is where the Rebbe like excerpts this from the Sikha. Okay, so I'm asking myself, so I don't understand. There's some kind of inherent or intrinsic message over here. And I'm like, I seem to be missing it. Like, what is the point? And then I realized something. Almost everything that we talked about has nothing to do with eating matzah. It's a description of matzah. It talks about the symbolism of matzah. If matzah is a talking point, a visual aid, so you're showing this is the matzah. And says you lift up the matzah. The Rashbam says, and Rashi talks about this, why do you lift up the matzah? You lift up the matzah to be able to show it to people. People should see what it is. Other Rishonim say to be mechav of the mitzvah, to appreciate the mitzvah. It doesn't say about eating the matzah. I have a visual aid. I'm on the table. This is the matzah. I need this lechem sha'onim olav dvarim harbe. It doesn't say it's matzah I eat. By the way, the poor person's bread, we know it's how you break it and it's how you bake it. That's what the Gemara says. You bake it, you right away knead it, put it straight in the oven. Because poor people don't have time. The fire is going to be out soon. So you got to bake it fast. Or how you break it. You're breaking off a piece. It has nothing to do with eating the matzah. So what does the mitzvah of eating matzah do for you? That's the question. The Gemara doesn't speak about eating matzah. The Gemara speaks about the symbolism of matzah. So what does eating matzah do for you? They say it's a mitzvah. Okay, it's a mitzvah. Does it do anything for you? What is the intended or the desired result of eating matzah? What is matzah supposed to do for us? So the Gemara doesn't speak about that. The Rishonim don't really speak about that. They speak about significance and symbolism. Where do we find something that's talked about, that's described the impact of matzah? That we look in the Zohar. And the Zohar uses two terminologies. The Zohar talks about healing, and the Zohar talks about faith. Talks of being healed of idolatry, weaned off idolatry, and being able to grasp the concept of faith. That's not matzah, that's eating matzah. So this was like the light bulb moment. This is like I started to understand something over here. So the Alter Rebbe in Torah Ur, the Alter Rebbe speaks about this in a Maimer called Sheishes Yomim Teichlu Matzahs. The Maimer is found in Lakuta Torah on Daf Yud Gimel Amud Dalad, where we start on the bottom of Yud Gimel Amud Gimel. So the mimer is a rather lengthy mimer. Remember, it starts with Ve'esheshes Yomim. And it talks about the concept that has a whole bunch of questions of the matzah, why eat the matzah. And then it introduces the concept of eating in general. And it uses Lurianic ideas from Pashas Ekev that there's a godly spark in the food. And when I eat the godly spark of the food and I ingest it, I'm able to absorb within myself that godly spark. Okay, that's very nice. That's about food in general. What does that do with matzah? Ah, so he starts talking about the matzah. What is matzah? We know that matzah is flour and water. It's not allowed to rise. What does that represent? Many of the Rishonim discuss it, that this represents the idea of humility. So matzah is the humble bread, the ultimate humble bread, right? The poor man's the ultimate humble bread. And then, at the very bottom of the page, then the Alter Rebbe says, and now we'll begin to understand how matzah, ingesting this humble bread, the flat cracker, means we're ingesting a certain kind of humility. And then he says, that, and now we'll also understand the nikra gam hamatzah bezor michle dememnusa. It's also called bread of faith. So in the Alter Rebbe's Maimer, it doesn't introduce matzah as bread of faith. It introduces the concept of eating and the idea of spirituality, spiritual sparks that are buried within food. It only comes around later to say, and this is what the Zohar meant. But the Alter Rebbe now begins to explain this. And the point of the previous Rebbe's talk is that this is the nuclei, this is the essence of the idea. What does that mean? This concept of bittul, this concept of humility, which is the matzah embodies and symbolizes. So when a yid eats this matzah, a Jewish man or woman, by virtue of ingesting this matzah, is able to allow themselves to be entered into the concept of faith. Why? Because what does faith represent? If I understand it, if I know it, if I see it clearly, does it require faith? No. What requires faith? Things that I don't understand, but I'm going to accept it. That's really the same concept of humility. It's the same concept of I'm going to put myself aside and I'm going to accept Hashem. So the Pharaoh said, God, I never heard of him. I'm God. I'm the master of my own destiny. I can figure this out. We can talk about this. We can have a conversation. Moshe said, there's no conversations. It doesn't matter if you do understand or don't understand. Faith is a leap beyond. So the concept of emunah is something that we necessarily don't understand. Emunah, says the Alter Rebbe, is bechinas bittul. Represents humility, represents a renouncing of self. Shemavatal sichli, a person says, it doesn't make any sense to me. Right. So why am I going to do it? Because I believe that's what Hashem wants. The concept of faith is where my understanding ends. That's where my faith begins. If my faith is based on my logic, my rhyme, my reason, then it's not faith. It's simple understanding. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have what we call emunah tahira. V'nimshech b'china zu b'neshama ayidei achilas matzah. And how does this come into the soul? How do we get this humility before Hashem, this ability to accept the presence of Hashem? That comes by virtue of eating matzah. When we eat matzah, it nourishes our faith. And so the Alter Rebbe says, actually, if you think about it, what does that mean? Just like physical food nourishes us physically, if a person eats physical food, he has the koyach to be able to live. If he doesn't eat any food, he has no strength. If you don't eat food for a very extended period of time, you can't keep life together. Body and soul will separate. So in the same way that food feeds the body, matzah feeds the soul. And in the same way that the actual food is feeding the body, the spiritual element of matzah is feeding the soul. Because every time we eat, there's both body and soul going on here. We're feeding our body with the carbohydrates, with the electrolytes, with the proteins, with whatever the food that the body assimilates and digests. We're also feeding our soul because there's a godly spark in the food. So the neshama is fed and the body's fed. And when you eat matzah, you're nourishing faith. And here, the Alter Rebbe draws on a fascinating statement that our sages make that he brings on earlier. It's the Gemara in Maseches Brachos. It says, Ein hatinik. A child doesn't recognize his father until he starts eating cereal, until he starts eating carbohydrates. So the Alter Rebbe says, does the child understand how his father is his father? What, he had a class in the bird and the bees? But how does he know to call father father? And is he not to call mama or papa? He doesn't understand it. He recognizes it. It's higher than understanding. It's not a rational thing. The child isn't capable of understanding. But he is capable of recognizing. Eini yodeya. He doesn't know, not understand, but know. Says the Alter Rebbe, in the same way that the child knows, it's clear to the child without understanding how that works and why there's a father and a mother and where the child comes from and how he's conceived and how he's born. He has no way of understanding these things. But the child knows inherently. When we eat matzah, we suddenly recognize Hashem. It gives us the ability to recognize Hashem. We are like that child in that metaphor. And the matzah is like that carbohydrate that the child ingests. And by virtue of that, experiences change. So the matzah ultimately serves achilas matzah, which is called in the Zohar, says the Alter Rebbe, michla de mehemenusa. It's called food of faith. This is the Alter Rebbe's terminology, based on the Zoharic terminology. Shohemuna hi hakara vahadas b'Hakadosh Baruch Hu. Emuna is when a person recognizes Hashem. He has a sense of certitude. If you ask a person who has a great amount of faith to explain how he came to the conclusion of faith, he will not be able to explain it. It's not a thing of rhyme and reason. It doesn't make sense. It's not a logical thing. It's not a thing you explain. How do they say the skeptic has no answers, the believer has no questions? It's clear to him. The person who has emunah has clarity. And that clarity comes from eating matzah. In the same way that physical bread or carbohydrates can stimulate some kind of brain activity where the child has clarity, the child knows this is my father, this is my mother. You can't go to put a stranger in front of a child and say, this is your mother today. Go try that with a baby. He knows exactly who his mother is. And at some point, he knows exactly who his father is. And there's a flicker of recognition before. He can't even speak. He knows. How does he know? Who explained it to him? That's a moot point. The child doesn't care. You don't have to explain it to him. He knows. We eat matzah, we know. The point then is this. The nuclei of this idea, when we say matzah is michla de memnusa, michla das vasa, when we say that it's bread of faith and healing, which are the terms that the Zohar uses, the Friedrich Rebbe says, es gita chizuk en das, it strengthens our faculty of recognition, of awareness, not understanding, of das, of awareness, that you're able to know you have a clarity about Hashem. It feeds the faith. And this is something. The nuclei of this idea was passed down from Rebbe to Rebbe because this is not a discussion about symbolism. This is not the traditional names of matzah. This is the essence of matzah. I found something fascinating. In the Sefer Derech Mitzvasecha, the Tzemach Tzedek has a maimer which is called the mitzvah of destroying chametz and eating matzah. So he talks about this idea, the matzah being feeding the faith. And then he says the Sefer HaChinuch, when he speaks about the recounting of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, he says it is a quote, and he's quoting Baron Halevi, he says, it's Yesoid Gadol, a great foundation, an Amud Chazak, a powerful pillar in our Torah and our Emunah, because it emphasizes the concept that we believe that Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and that we're eating matzah, in the same way our ancestors ate matzah. Year after year we ate matzah. There was never a time when Jews didn't eat matzah. We have an unbroken tradition. So the Tzemach Tzedek says, even though he wrote these words on a very literal level, where matzah is an identifiable piece of food, which is similar to the food baked last year and the year before and the year before and the year before, all the way back to when we left Mitzrayim. Shayadei ha-matzais shenasa zikaron liyetzias Mitzrayim, that through the matzah serving as a visual aid of memory for going out of Mitzrayim, tikova b'libeinu ha-emunah, so the idea of faith becomes established in our heart. And he says, and here you have the Zohar telling us that it's this business of feeding faith, nourishing faith. A person eats matzah, suddenly has clarity about faith. So the Tzemach Tzedek says, I already told this to you when I discussed the mitzvah of Brit Milah. Oraita satim vegalia. The Torah speaks to us on an exoteric level. The Torah speaks to us on an esoteric level. They're not two different Torahs. The Torah, the mystical teachings of Torah and the literal teachings of Torah are not two separate Torahs. There's the way it appears on the surface, on the outside. And then there's the nister. Then there is the idea that is behind it. There's the superficial reality. And then there is the essence or the spirituality, the nuclei of the idea. And so it is with the matzah. The matzah is a visual aid. The matzah is an example of something we can point our fingers to and say, this is bread of affliction. This is bread of redemption. at a deeper level, what's really happening is that the matzah literally nourishes and feeds the faith. And that is the essence of matzah. And this is very eye-opening. As you go back to the Rebbe's comment, the comment before is all about matzah being biblically mandated and in every time and every place a Jew is to eat matzah. But what is the effect of eating matzah? What does matzah do to you besides indigestion? But that's a physical thing. What does matzah do for you? Says the Rebbe, matzah, the eating of matzah, the consumption of matzah, this, you look at the Zohar, you see it's asvasa, it's healing. You see it's mehemnusa, you see that it's faith. And this is an akuda, pnimi, and atzmi. This is an intrinsic and inherent concept that was passed down. This illumination was given from Achi HaShaloni to the Baal Shem Tov. He passed it to the Magid. The Magid passed it to the Alter Rebbe, and the Rabbeim continued to develop and apply this idea in real time in every generation. You know, they tell a story. Somebody once came to the Friedrich Rebbe, and he said, "You're the Lubavitcher Rebbe?" And he said, "Yes." He was in a lobby of a Parisian hotel. And they said, "Who needs Hasidus? Before Hasidus, we also learned Torah. What did Hasidus do for us?" So the Friedrich Rebbe began to point out the finer architectural details of this beautiful lobby in Paris. And the man said, "Rebbe, please don't change the subject. I didn't ask you about architecture. I'm asking you about Hasidus." And the Friedrich Rebbe said, "I'm not changing the subject. I'm answering your question." He said, "What do you mean?" The Rebbe said, "Did you notice all these beautiful details before I pointed them out?" So the man had to admit he didn't. So the Rebbe said, "This is the essence of Hasidus, to shine a bright light on the details that nobody ever noticed. This is the essence of what matzah is really all about. This is the chiddush, the novelty of Hasidus. This is what Achi HaShaloni came, you know, before Hasidus, whatever, it's buried in the Zohar somewhere. So the Zohar says something about asvasa mehemnusa. No. Achi HaShaloni said to the Baal Shem Tov, that's the idea, that's what consumption of matzah is. That's what matzah does." I heard that there was a simple man who used to come to the Rebbe's Seder. His name was Yankel Katz from Chicago. And he would read, he was the Makri, he would read the Haggadah out loud. He was not a learned person, he was a business person. It's a long story how he came to that position. He once asked the Rebbe, "What should I think about when I eat matzah?" The Rebbe said, "I'm a shlink delikus. You're swallowing godliness." You gotta think about it. You're eating matzah, you're eating spirituality. And this eating of spirituality, it nourishes us. It nourishes our faith. It heals us and nourishes our faith. And go back to the original talk of the Friedrich Rebbe. The Friedrich Rebbe says that the explanation of this vort, of this teaching is, achila, eating, is inyan pnimi. We digest something, it becomes a part of us. And what does it do when a person has a good meal? What happens? You feel energized again. When you're starving, you have no koyach. You know, it's a fast day, it's after Yom Kippur. And then you eat, and you say, you feel like a mensch again. You finally get that coffee you've been craving for 20 hours. You finally have something sweet. You feel good again. It infuses strength. It gives a chayas of the nefesh into the limbs of the body. And the body itself is strengthened. So he says, so this is the concept that the soul is pronounced in the body. The person feels alive. He didn't feel alive before. He eats and he feels alive now. He feels like himself. He feels he's able to function. The Friedrich Rebbe said, emuna is not tam vadas. Faith is not rhyme and reason. About things that you understand, we don't have to use the terminology of faith. You don't have to believe in things that make sense to you. You understand it. You say seeing is believing. So what is seeing? Seeing is seeing, understanding is understanding, touching is touching, hearing is hearing, and believing is believing. It's the way I relate to something that I can't touch, see, feel, or understand. So it doesn't mean that a person understands it in a logical way, but at the same time, he has an absolute certitude. He has what we call emuna pshuta. And this is exactly the meaning that matzah is called bread of faith and that matzah is called bread of healing. A person is starving, he's hungry, he eats, he feels he comes back to life. All of a sudden he feels settled. He feels, as we call it, like a mensch again. And he has koyach. When a person eats matzah, you function like a yid again. It gives you the ability to feel and to think Jewishly. And to feel and think Jewishly is to live with emunah, with a certitude about the presence of Hashem. And that's what the eating of matzah is all about. And that's why this comes. It's interesting how the Maimer, how the here he describes is going from Rebbe to Rebbe, because really the way we understand what is the purpose of a Rebbe, what was the purpose of Moshe Rabbeinu, was called the first Rebbe. The Zohar calls him a Raya Mehemna, a shepherd of faith. So on a literal level, it's a faithful shepherd. He was faithful. He was loyal. Takes care of his charges. But on a deeper level, Chassidus emphasizes that the Rebbe is a shepherd of faith. That the Rebbe somehow, a tzaddik, nurtures faith within the Yid. He's able to stimulate faith within the Yid. The very being of the tzaddik somehow helps people to find their faith strengthened and fortified. So this is the essence of matzah. And this was given from Rebbe to Rebbe. And this is something that they continue to speak about and to teach. And the sum total was more than the sum of its parts, because the end was not just something, another understanding. The end result is a clarity and a certitude about the presence of Hashem Yisbarach, the idea of fortified faith, strengthened emunah. And this, I believe, is the pshat in this little paragraph. And you know what? Now it makes a lot of sense. Now you're going to ask me the question, is it physical healing? Does it affect the body? Does it only affect the soul? So for this, Be'ezrat Hashem, part two, which will be called something like faith in healing or something like that, or faith healing, we're going to talk about that second, because in the second piska, in the second paragraph, the Rebbe addresses this very idea. And that, my dear friends, is what I had to share for tonight. Shekoyach! Thank you for joining in person. Thank you for joining online. And please keep coming.